It's Tuesday, July 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Welcome and hello. Coming up, residents and police in Dallas are still coming to grips with shooting deaths amid a new incident in Michigan. Japanese voters support their prime minister, or do they?
The momentum suggests that there could be some more to the upside here.
U.S. financial markets soar to new records. Also ahead, top chefs cook up their competitive best. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Three people were shot dead Monday at a county courthouse in the northern U.S. state of Michigan. Local police say two of the dead were court bailiffs. The third was the shooter. A deputy sheriff was also wounded, but early reports said his injuries are not life-threatening. The shooting took place at the Berrien County Courthouse in St. Joseph, Michigan. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder says state police have secured the crime scene. Meanwhile, investigators in Dallas, Texas, are continuing to probe the background of the Dallas gunman who killed five policemen last week. Authorities are examining 170 hours of video from cameras worn by officers, as well as footage from dashboard cameras inside of police cars and video from retail store security cameras in the area. U.S. President Barack Obama visits Dallas later today for a memorial service for the five policemen who were killed. He has called on Americans to mutually respect fellow citizens after the recent days of violence. VOA correspondent Mike O'Sullivan shared with International Edition's Michael Lippin the mood on the street today in Dallas.
The city is getting back to work. The downtown streets are clogged because the central area is still blocked off. So the traffic jams around that immediate area are very bad. But, people are at work going about their daily business, but there's a sense of heaviness over the city. And I'm out at the memorial in front of the Dallas Police Headquarters this morning. And, people are stopping by, not the same numbers that we saw yesterday, but you're seeing police officers who are coming out of the building and paying their respects. Firefighters, a group just stopped by, police officers from other departments, and ordinary citizens, and people of all races, Hispanic and African-American, stopping by. You were seeing tears. Yesterday, you were seeing a lot of tears because there were a lot of police officers, and people were just shaking their hands and hugging them, and, a lot of emotion yesterday.
When you speak to people who are at the memorial today, what is the general message you're hearing from them about their feelings toward what happened?
Well, people use words like they're angry, they're numb, they're feeling pain, but almost everybody has a very positive message that they think that somehow the city can get past this and that the healing process has started. And people don't have a lot of specific ideas on how that's going to happen, but they talk about reaching out and embracing people and expressing their concern for other people and kind of breaking down barriers. And everybody I've talked to seems to think that can happen.
What are residents of Dallas saying about the different slogans that people have been using on social media to talk about their sympathies in this situation, sympathies with Black Lives Matter, sympathies with Blue Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. Are people using those slogans at all?
Not so much at the memorial site. You see some handwritten notes that say All Lives Matter. But when you talk to African-Americans, and the ones who have come here are expressing their support for the Dallas police, but at the same time, if you talk to almost any African-American, they'll talk about problems in the country, strains between African-Americans and minority communities and the various police departments. But almost everyone I've spoken to here say the situation is much better in Dallas than it is in most places. I mean, there have been protests and there are some tensions, but the police department, which has an African American chief, David Brown, has an active community outreach program and community policing and stresses interaction and dialogue. And so really everybody I've spoken with says that the situation is much better here in Dallas than it is in many places, and this is not the place where you would expect an event like what happened Thursday to occur.
VOA's Mike O'Sullivan in Dallas, Texas. We also have a new video on our website at voanews.com that you might be interested in. It takes you inside a new training program that aims to teach basic search and rescue to the men and women who may be responding to an active shooter. It's video you don't want to miss. It's at voanews.com. We turn to what's buzzing now online. International Edition's social media guru G. Abby Lee joins me right here in Studio 22, and she's here with our developing story in Michigan. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. And even before the media outlets reported the breaking news, a Twitter user broke the news on social media. A woman named Zaria Stark, who apparently works at the courthouse, sent out her first tweet Monday afternoon. She tweeted, "There is an active shooting happening in the hashtag Berrien County Courthouse. Please RT, which means retweet. This is where I work." She also sent out a few other tweets following that. She wrote, "The shooting is taking place on the third floor of the building and that she is safe and unharmed."
So what other accounts have you been following today?
Of course, the Michigan Governor Rick Snyder's account and also the Detroit Free Press. Snyder is on Twitter at One Tough Nerd, and he sent out two tweets about the event. In one of those tweets, he asked his followers to join him in praying for those affected. He also wrote, "The Michigan State Police has secured the scene at the Berrien County Courthouse and started an investigation." The Detroit Free Press is on Twitter at FreeP, but I have to say, although it's based in Michigan, its tweets are not any more informative, rather, than those from other media accounts.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to Facebook. What's the reaction like there?
Jim, as you know, Facebook allows for a more in-depth discussion because you can write more, and a video posted by CNN is getting quite a bit of attention. The most liked comment to that post is by a man named Delmer, and he wrote, "Every terrorist group in the Middle East must be laughing at us. This country has become a self-destructing time bomb," referring to the way we are attacking each other in the same country. Others still blame the media for causing panic across the country and argued the media outlets should really wait for accurate details before sending out all this information. And before I go, I also want to mention Donald Trump's tweet real quickly. He wrote, "Thoughts and prayers with the victims and their families, along with everyone at the Berrien County Courthouse in St. Joseph, Michigan." That's all for me today. Jim?
A lot of interesting observations online. Thank you for curating those and that great wrap-up, G. You may tweet your comments and questions to our Twitter stream at @VOA_IE. And there on Twitter, you'll find myself and G as well. I'm at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending at this hour in Asia. International court ruling on China and Philippines dispute could be vital. North Korea cuts diplomatic communication with the United States. Prominent critics' killing raises political stakes in Cambodia. Afghanistan's Ghani urges Pakistan to expel insurgents from its soil. Chinese rights lawyers demand immediate release of colleague. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, in power since 2012, claimed victory Monday in upper parliamentary elections as his Liberal Democratic Party coalition captured a two-thirds supermajority of seats. That despite growing concerns about his economic policies, also known as Abenomics, and plans to revise the country's post-war pacifist constitution. The LDP, which controls the more powerful lower house, took 56 of 121 contested seats, while its junior partner captured 14. Asian Studies professor Jeff Kingston of the Tokyo-based Temple University tells VOA's Victor Beatty that the victory is not necessarily voter endorsement of Mr. Abe's policies, but rather a lack of a coherent message from any of the opposition. And he was asked if Japan is, for the most part, today, a one-party state.
I'd say more or less it does seem like something like a one-party state. And I think voters are fairly dispirited, as about 46% of them stayed home rather than go out and vote.
What does this mean for Japan's economy?
Prime Minister Abe has a rather deep hole to climb out of. Exit polls show that only 8% of voters think that Abenomics is working well. And this general sense that Abenomics is dead in the water is widely shared in the business community. And so I think that people are waiting for him to deliver, and he hasn't really done so. Abenomics is pretty much discredited around the world because he's relying entirely on monetary easing, and that's not doing the job. So the economy remains stagnant. The higher yen is hurting Japanese exports. Household income is stagnant, and new job growth is concentrated in non-regular part-time jobs. So across the board, there really isn't very much good news, and many people view Abenomics as mostly welfare for the wealthy. So what he's got to now do is try to rev up Abenomics, and I think we're going to see a large stimulus package try to promote demand and consumption.
What about the Constitution? Is that controversial, and will he do something? He's promised a deeper debate on the matter.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is in his bait-and-switch campaign strategy, he ran on Abenomics and never mentioned revising the Constitution. But last night in his victory speech, he said, well, constitutional revision will be reviewed by panels in the Diet. So clearly he has his eyes on revising the Constitution. And everybody's wondering, well, what exactly that will entail, because the devil's in the details. One of the troubling things for Abe is that the percentage of voters who favor constitutional revision has declined 6% since 3 years ago, is now only 1 out of 3 Japanese support this, and that's just as a general proposition. So when it comes down to the details of what he wants to revise and how he wants to revise it, I imagine he's going to face some tough going. So most people think he's targeting Article 9 of Japan's pacifist constitution because he thinks that this article, which basically, Japan says it won't maintain armed forces and won't resort to war, is outdated and not sufficient for the 21st century.
Jeff Kingston says the trauma and devastation caused by World War II has become deeply embedded in Japanese thinking, and that will make any attempt at a major revision of the Constitution very difficult. Well, just hours from now, an international tribunal will be issuing a ruling on a territorial dispute between China and the Philippines in the South China Sea. Although this decision will not determine sovereignty of the territory in question, it could have some wide-ranging implications for China's sweeping claims in one of the world's most important and bitterly contested waterways. We'll have much more on this at this time tomorrow on International Edition. Well, while investment markets are struggling to find some direction, the movement here in the United States is clearly up. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York to explain why.
The S&P 500 pushed through record highs set in May 2015 after several failed attempts, while the NASDAQ traded across 5,000. Today's stocks tied to the economy, like consumer cyclicals, have been doing well, as are NASDAQ leaders like Amazon, Nvidia, and Comcast. The focus on Wall Street shifts to earnings, with Alcoa reporting after the market closes today, followed by the large financials JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo later this week. And according to S&P Global Market Intelligence, only 4 of 10 S&P sectors are projected to have positive earnings growth. But let's look at it like this way. Energy and financials have lagged the last few weeks, with the market surging back to highs. So if bank earnings aren't as bad as feared, or if they really do beat expectations, and let's say oil prices resume their upward trend, this market could continue to push higher in the face of weak economics in China, Europe, and as defensive sectors like gold and bonds are also making new highs, which was interesting. So there's a couple things at work here. Volumes have been relatively high for this time of year, and the momentum is definitely there. heading into earnings, which is interesting because global growth has been slowing. Perhaps the U.S. market is viewed as more relatively stable and there really is no other place to drive yield or income as bonds are virtually paying nothing. Some economists also believe we may be slowly improving from a disappointing first quarter and declines over the past four quarters. In fact, by next quarter, 8 of 10 sectors are expected to be positive. All this remains to be seen. One thing for sure is it won't be a slow summer. There's a lot of economic and political variables up in the air for the second half of 2016. So I think what we're seeing with the U.S. markets, we're the best house on a bad block, for lack of a better term, because you're not getting yield anywhere else. A few other things I would look out for, especially as it pertains to earnings. The U.S. dollar, it's been exceptionally strong. So for your big conglomerates like a GE, for example, that has a lot of international exposure, if the dollar continues to move higher, that's something you have to pay attention to because that will impact revenue. Oil, again, is another wild card. I think interest rates for a rate hike, for the most part, off the table for 2016. And you know what, Jim, we talk about market timing all the time. We were down 14% on the February 11th low. We are now talking about record all-time highs in just a few months. So this is what we always talk about for a retail investor. Think about longer-term averages because these ups and downs over the year have played out well for retail investors.
It is an amazing rebound. And you look at oil today, for instance, which is down. That hasn't affected the market's momentum. And even a little bit of a rebound in some European banks. And, of course, Japan went way up after the elections there and a presumed confirmation of Abenomics for Shinzo Abe, the prime minister.
Right. And I think, again, with the financials really having not participated in this rally because low interest rates, negative interest rates aren't good for banks. They can't grow margins or grow revenue until you start to see an uptick in interest rates. And the market is hitting all-time highs. The oil sector has gotten beaten down. In fact, we're expecting another decline for this quarter. So should you get a bid, even in the financial stocks or in the energy stocks, and the volume is here in the market, you know, I'm not putting on the Dow 20,000 hat or anything like that, but the momentum suggests that there could be some more to the upside here. So, you know, I don't think this is going to be slow summer trading. There are a lot of variables at play, but I also think it's good that we're focusing on company-specific news and moving away a bit from interest rates and other macro events like Brexit. Traders have something else to focus on that's company-specific and stock-specific.
The markets are up, and it's always an up day when we get to speak with Jill Malandrino from New York. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, as the old saying goes, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. VOA's Tina Trin met the next generation of chefs who definitely embrace the heat and are quickly learning to adapt to pressure cooker environments. Guided by some of the best chefs in New York City, a select few will be representing the United States in a world-class cooking competition.
Danielle Balut is arguably one of the best chefs in New York City, with 7 restaurants in Manhattan, 6 James Beard Awards, and countless other culinary accolades. But today, he's leaving the cooking to someone else. Someone like 18-year-old Mimi Chen, who's among the aspiring chefs competing for a chance to attend the premier Bocuse d'Or cooking competition.
The Bocuse d'Or is basically the world championships of cooking. So it's essentially 60 countries vying for 24 spots at a final that's held every 2 years in Lyon, France.
Chen is among the young finalists who have a shot at traveling and working with Team USA. The once-in-a-lifetime opportunity is made possible by Mentor, a nonprofit started by Chef Boulud, Thomas Keller, and Jerome Boucous.
For every grant we give to a young chef to be able to take a sabbatical from his job, to be able to experiment other people's places, and yet go back to their job and come back energized, come back inspired. That's why we're looking for helping the next generation to be better than us.
It's hard to imagine anyone better than the chefs who recently assembled at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. But the road to culinary greatness starts young and early.
I was 17. I went to culinary school and then graduated when I was 19. It's about pushing yourself to work for the best, finding the right chefs to work for, and then sticking it out.
Brendan Scott is only 20, but already has big plans.
I want to be a chef. I want to compete in the Bocuse. I want to open my own restaurant. I want to do all these things, but no matter what, like, it's just going to take time.
According to the National Restaurant Association, industry sales for commercial restaurants are projected at $720 billion this year. For young chefs hoping to make their mark, mentorships can be crucial.
There's restaurants that you just can't make that leap to sometimes on your own, and this is our way of recognizing talent and connecting it to opportunity.
That opportunity just paid off for Mimi Chen, who in the end won the Komi, or apprenticeship competition. A victory perhaps not only for her, but for the culinary world. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can always find us at our website, voanews.com. While you're online, like us on Facebook, VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. For Tracy Carter and engineer Jim Harmon, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 24, 1942, one of the darkest days of the Second World War, radio listeners in Axis-occupied Europe heard this announcement. Daily at this time we shall speak to you about America and the war. The news may be good or bad. We shall tell you the truth. For nearly 75 years, VOA has kept that promise. It was a promise reaffirmed on July 12, 1976, in the VOA Charter, given by the U.S. Congress and signed into law by President Gerald Ford. The Charter provides, first, that VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news, and that news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. Second, that VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will present a balanced, comprehensive projection of significant American thoughts and institutions. Third, that VOA will present the policies of the United States clearly and effectively, as well as responsible discussions and opinion of these policies. The Charter's first principle protects the journalistic integrity of VOA News. No official is allowed to pressure a reporter to spin a story in a certain direction. The second ensures that the diversity of America, from sea to shining sea, from Muslim to Christian to Jew to non-believer, from universities to factories to think tanks to Hollywood, is represented. And the third guarantees the world knows where the United States government clearly stands on important issues of the day and why. On the Charter's 40th anniversary, Amanda Bennett, director of the Voice of America, spoke of its enduring relevance.
The VOA Charter has never been more important than it is today. The world really needs a reliable and authoritative source of news and information, which is what the VOA Charter intends us to be.
The Charter remains the Voice of America's lodestar, guiding its mission to present the truth and, as Director Bennett said, to reflect all sides of the American discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.